The Renters' Rights Act. Is being a landlord still worth it? Here is the honest answer, before anything else. For some landlords, yes. For others, probably not. The Renters' Rights Act did not create that divide. It accelerated it. And which side of it you sit on depends on your specific position, not on the headlines. That is what this article is designed to help you work out, not through political commentary, not through reassurance, through the evidence, so that whatever decision you make it on the basis of what is actually true rather than what is loudest in the room. We hear some version of the same question week after week. A landlord, sometimes with one property and sometimes with 15, reaches a point where the frustration tips over. The admin, the compliance, the constant sense that the goalposts are moving again, that the people making the rules have never owned a rental property in their lives, and that nobody in any position of authority is particularly bothered about what it costs to provide one. And then the question, spoken or unspoken, is this still actually worth it? That question deserves a serious answer, not a balanced non-answer designed not to offend anyone, not a lecture about professionalism, a clear-eyed look at what is actually happening in the sector, who it is affecting most, and what it means practically for the landlords trying to make rational decisions inside it. What this article will not do is pretend that everyone's answer is the same. The Renters' Rights Act 2025 does not affect all landlords equally. It does not affect all portfolios equally, and the right response to it depends entirely on where you personally stand, your numbers, your structure, your financing, and what you are ultimately trying to achieve. The UK rental market is going through something real, not a temporary wobble, not another headline-driven panic cycle, a genuine structural shift in how private renting works in this country. Understanding that shift clearly, rather than reacting to it, is the most useful thing a landlord can do right now. What has actually changed? It is worth being precise here, because a significant amount of the fear circulating right now is based on a misunderstanding of what is actually in force today and what is still several years away. From the 1st of May 2026, assured shorthold tenancies no longer exist. Every tenancy in England's private rented sector is now a rolling tenancy with no fixed end date. Tenants can give 2 months' notice to leave at any time. Landlords can no longer serve a Section 21 notice under any circumstances. To regain possession of a property, landlords now need to rely on Section 8, a legal process that requires proving a specific ground. The revised grounds include significant rent arrears, antisocial behaviour, the landlord or a close family member needing to move back in, or the landlord intending to sell the property. The conditions and notice periods attached to each ground vary and must be followed precisely. If you are not clear on how the revised grounds apply to your tenancies, specialist legal guidance should be the first call. There was also an immediate compliance deadline. If you held existing tenancies on the 1st of May 2026, you had until the 31st of May 2026 to provide those tenants with the government's official information sheet explaining the changes. Missing that deadline carries a civil penalty of up to £7,000. The sheet is available directly from gov.uk. One element that receives less attention than it should is the question of how the new possession system will perform under pressure. Section 21 allowed landlords to use an accelerated court process that did not require a hearing. Section 8 does. Every contested possession case now goes through a court hearing. According to Ministry of Justice statistics for Q4 2025, the median time from a landlord's initial possession claim through to repossession is currently 27 weeks, up from 25 weeks a year earlier, and rising consistently across every quarter since 2023. Under the new Section 8 regime, where hearing volumes are expected to increase substantially, that timeline is under further pressure. For a landlord dealing with a genuinely problematic tenancy, the gap between filing a claim and recovering possession is a significant financial exposure. One difficult case can absorb years of profit from a smaller portfolio. The rest of the Act is still several years away from coming into force. The private rented sector database, which will require landlords to register themselves and each of their properties, will begin a regional rollout from late 2026, with full mandatory registration expected in 2027 or 2028. The Landlord Ombudsman is expected around 2028. The Decent Homes Standard is unlikely to apply in full before 2035. AWAB's law remains out for consultation with no confirmed implementation date. This is a 10-year programme of reform, not a single overnight event. Where you actually are in that timeline changes how you think about it. Why this is happening? The frustration many landlords feel at the direction of travel is entirely legitimate. This is not a small inconvenience. For landlords who have invested significantly, financially, personally, and practically in providing housing, to have the rules of that system rewritten repeatedly and fundamentally is genuinely difficult. That frustration does not need to be explained away. Understanding why the reforms are happening, however, is useful for planning purposes, not because it makes them more acceptable, but because it tells you something about the durability of the changes. England has 4.7 million households in the private rented sector, representing around 11 million people, according to the English Housing Survey 2023/24. Many of those renters are not young professionals between flats. They are families, older people, people with no realistic prospect of buying a home in the near term. For them, renting is not a short-term step. It is home. Average UK rents reached £1,342 per month in mid-2025, up 8.9% year-on-year, according to research by Landlord Buyer published in August 2025. In Bristol, the same data showed rents up 11.8% over the same period to £1,488 per month. The political pressure that produced the Renters' Rights Act was not going away, regardless of which party formed the government. The direction of travel for the private rented sector is clear: more regulation, higher standards, greater oversight. The practical question, and the commercially relevant one, is not whether that trend continues, but what it means for the landlords operating inside it now and in the years ahead. The real market impact: professional landlords versus accidental landlords. This is where the story gets interesting and where most of the coverage misses the point. The biggest impact to the Renters' Rights Act may not be felt in tenancy agreements at all. It may be felt in the growing divide between landlords who have the capacity to absorb regulatory change and those who do not. Regulation rarely hits all landlords equally. A landlord with a well-run portfolio, solid cash reserves, a good agent or management system, and a clear long-term view is in a fundamentally different position from one operating without those foundations. That is not a criticism of how anyone has run their portfolio. In many cases, people built their approach around the conditions that existed when they started: low rates, rising values, more straightforward possession routes, a market that, for a time, rewarded relatively passive ownership. That environment is simply no longer the one they are operating in. We recently spoke with a landlord in North Bristol with more than 15 properties. He had managed his portfolio successfully for years, but the cumulative pressure had reached a tipping point. Every new rule, every compliance update, every rate change had added another weight to a pile that was starting to feel unsustainable. His instinct was to sell. To walk away from something that felt like it had been systematically made hostile to the people running it. What changed was not his circumstances. It was the picture he had of them. When he sat down and went through his portfolio carefully, the reality was very different from the one his frustration had painted. His properties were performing solidly. His tenants were stable. His asset values were holding. The compliance requirements, while genuinely demanding, were manageable with better systems in place. His decision to potentially exit was not being driven by the portfolio's performance. It was being driven by an incomplete picture of it. With a clearer view of where things actually stood, he was able to make a more informed decision about what to do next, based on facts rather than the weight of accumulated frustration. That situation is not unusual. The conditions that now define the private rented sector, namely tighter compliance, higher costs, and a longer legal process for possession, are the same conditions for everyone. What varies enormously is how exposed any individual landlord is to them, and whether the numbers in their specific situation still work. That is a question that can only be answered case by case. Buy-to-let is not dead. The economics are changing. Few phrases come up more often in landlord discussions than buy-to-let is dead. Few are less grounded in the evidence. An estimated 93,000 buy-to-let landlords left the private rented sector in 2025, up from an estimated 65,000 the year before, according to research by Black & White, Bridging and Landlord Buyer. These are industry estimates rather than official government figures, but they reflect a consistent pattern across multiple data sources. Research from Savills found that in 2024, approximately 5.4 homes were sold by landlords to owner-occupiers for every one property bought by a new landlord investor. According to a National Residential Landlords Association survey, conducted in 2026, 41% of remaining landlords indicated they were likely to sell at least some of their portfolio in the coming year. Those are significant numbers. They reflect real pressure across the sector. The context matters, however. According to research by Hamptons, an estimated 70 to 75% of all new buy-to-let purchases are now being made through a limited company structure, a figure that has grown steadily since changes to mortgage interest tax relief were introduced in 2016. By February 2026, Hamptons estimated this had risen further to around 75 to 80% of new purchases. There are now more than 443,000 companies registered with Companies House specifically set up to hold rental property, representing a 332% increase over 9 years. The landlords leaving the market are, broadly, those with one or two properties held in their own names, often on the tightest margins and often without specialist support. The landlords continuing to invest are largely doing so through company structures, with longer investment horizons and more considered financing. Buy-to-let as a sector is changing shape rather than disappearing. The version of it that required minimal active management is under the most pressure. That is a materially different statement from saying that property investment no longer works. The landlords most likely to struggle, not all of the risk facing landlords right now, comes from legislation. Some of it comes from how portfolios were built, and more importantly, from the gap between the environment they were built for and the one they now operate in. Landlords who built their approach around the conditions that existed between 2010 and 2020 were, in many cases, doing exactly what made rational sense at the time. Low rates made higher borrowing manageable. Rising values provided a buffer. Possession routes were more straightforward. A strategy that relied on things going broadly right was a reasonable strategy in a market that largely delivered on that assumption. That market has changed significantly, and a number of portfolios that looked entirely sound in 2019 look quite different today. The landlords most likely to find the next few years genuinely difficult are typically those carrying high borrowing levels with little or no cash buffer, managing everything alone without any proper systems or professional support, working from a tax position that has not been reviewed since the Section 24 changes came in, or operating with an incomplete picture of what their portfolio actually looks like in 2026. None of that means things will necessarily go wrong, but the margin for error has narrowed considerably. A longer gap between tenants, a slow possession case, an unexpected repair bill, or a higher rate at refinancing can all hit harder when there is nothing in reserve. The question worth asking is not whether you are running things the way you used to. It is whether the approach you have is matched to the environment you are actually in. What this could mean for mortgages and portfolio strategy. The Renters' Rights Act is not mortgage legislation, but it changes the context in which landlords need to think about their financing, and that context matters. Lenders are operating in a more cautious environment. Affordability stress testing is tighter than it was. The Prudential Regulation Authority's portfolio rules mean lenders assess the full picture across all of a borrower's properties, not just the one being financed. As running costs and compliance obligations increase, lenders are paying closer attention to whether a portfolio is genuinely viable at a property level and across the whole book. Some landlords may want to look carefully at their borrowing levels and think through how they would manage if rates remained higher for longer than currently expected. Others may want to look at whether properties are spread sensibly across lenders and whether each property in the portfolio is still performing as expected against the original investment rationale. Others still need to review fixed rates before they expire, rather than waiting until they do. the options available ahead of expiry are typically wider than those available at it. The question of company structures has become more relevant for many landlords in recent years. Whether a limited company structure is appropriate depends entirely on individual tax position, existing portfolio structure, the costs of any transition, and longer-term plans. This is a decision that requires qualified tax and legal advice before any action is taken, as the right answer varies significantly from one landlord to the next. What Haupton & Co can do is work with landlords across both personal name and limited company buy-to-let structures and help connect those for whom the incorporation question is live with specialist tax advisors who understand the landlord market. If you are already operating through a company or considering whether you should be, that is a conversation worth having with advisors who know both the mortgage and the wider structural landscape. The days of building a portfolio and leaving it largely untouched are becoming harder to sustain. Landlords who revisit their financing and structure regularly have a clearer picture of where they stand and more options available when circumstances change. The good, the bad, and the ugly. It is worth being honest about all three. The good: landlords who have always maintained their properties properly and treated their tenants well will not find the new compliance environment dramatically different from the one they were already operating in. For those landlords, the Renters' Rights Act is largely an administrative adjustment rather than a fundamental disruption. As the market shifts towards more professionally managed stock, the gap between well-run and poorly run operations becomes more visible. And in some cases, that visibility works in favour of those who have been operating to a high standard all along. The bad: the administrative burden is real and it is growing. Running rental properties is more time intensive, more process driven, and more financially exposed than it was 5 years ago. For smaller landlords especially, compliance requirements can feel completely out of proportion to the scale of what they are actually running. The costs, including agent fees, compliance checks, safety certificates, and licensing fees, have increased significantly at the same time as the flexibility to respond to problems has reduced. That frustration is legitimate and should not be dismissed. The ugly. The part that rarely makes it into political commentary is this: the unintended consequences of the current squeeze may affect tenants more severely than many people currently anticipate. When landlords exit and rental homes leave the market permanently, supply falls. The NRLA stated in 2025 that landlord sales had become the single biggest cause of tenancy endings in the UK, describing the trend as disastrous for tenants. Reduced supply alongside strong and sustained tenant demand does not typically produce lower rents. Legislation designed partly to protect tenants could, if it drives enough landlords out of the market, end up making the position of the very people it was intended to help considerably harder. This is not a landlord argument. It is a supply and demand observation, and one that the current policy framework has not yet fully resolved. What smart landlords are thinking about now? The landlords handling this period well are not the ones making the most noise online. They are the ones quietly reviewing their position and getting on with it. They are going through their portfolios honestly, looking at which properties are performing and which are not, identifying anything that needs attention before it becomes a problem, and separating the emotion of the current environment from the actual numbers. In more than a few cases, that honest review produces a different picture from the one frustration had painted. They are thinking about their tenants differently. In a market without Section 21, the quality of the relationship from the outset matters more than it did before, as does the rigour of referencing at the start of a tenancy. Getting it right at the beginning is the most effective way to reduce the risk of needing formal possession proceedings at all. They are building cash reserves, not as a vague aspiration, but as a deliberate, planned part of how they run their portfolios. They are reviewing their financing before they have to. Fixed rates, lender relationships, and portfolio spread are worth reviewing while options are open, not when a rate has already expired. They are taking a longer view, not focused solely on this month's rate or this year's legislation, but on what their portfolio needs to look like in 5 or 10 years and what decisions now are consistent with that. and they are getting better information from qualified solicitors, accountants, and mortgage advisors who understand the landlord market specifically, rather than relying on general commentary or forum opinion. In a tighter market with less margin for error, the quality of the information going into property decisions matters considerably more than it did when conditions were forgiving. If any of that applies to where you currently are, whether that is a fixed rate approaching, a portfolio that has not been reviewed for a while, a financing question that has been sitting on the back burner, or simply a need for a clear and current picture of your options, that is the kind of conversation we have with landlords every week. Book a confidential consultation with Ed at Hort & Co. What kind of rental market is the UK heading towards? So, is being a landlord still worth it? The honest, evidence-based answer is this: for landlords with well-performing portfolios, adequate cash reserves, financing that is regularly reviewed, and a clear long-term view of what they are trying to achieve, the private rented sector can still work. It is harder than it was. It demands more active management. But the underlying economics, for those in the right position, remain viable. For landlords on thin margins, with high leverage, limited reserves, and no particular appetite for the increased administrative and compliance demands, the honest assessment may point in a different direction. That is not a failure. It is a rational response to a changed environment. And for some landlords, it is the right answer. Deciding to exit a market that no longer fits your circumstances is a sound financial decision, provided it is made deliberately and on the basis of facts rather than driven by frustration into a transaction you have not fully thought through. The private rented sector is becoming less of a passive asset class and more of an active one. That shift was already underway before this act came along. The legislation is accelerating it rather than starting it. Being a landlord in 2026 is harder than it was in 2016. That is simply true, but harder is not the same as unworkable. And frustration, however justified, is not a sound basis for a significant financial decision either way. The most useful thing you can do right now is get an honest and current picture of where you actually stand. That is a conversation Hort & Co. is built for. Book a confidential consultation with Ed. We work with landlords at every stage, from those reviewing whether the numbers still work, to those restructuring existing portfolios, to those refinancing ahead of rate expiry.